Well, it was Census Day on Tuesday this week, and on the morning after, the Australian Bureau of Statistics reported receiving more than 8 million household forms, saying that over two-thirds of households completed a census form, reporting that's higher than the 2021 census. Now, our next guest is a census enthusiast who didn't fill out a form because he now lives in the US. Andrew Whitby is an Australian data scientist and economist, and he's worked at the World Bank and was the founding editor of the Atlas of the Sustainable Development Goals, but he's also the author of the book, The Sum of the People, How the Census Has Shaped Nations from the Ancient World to the Modern Age, which covers three millennia of censuses. It's an absolutely fascinating account. And of each quest for statistical perfection, Andrew says, that we will fail is a certainty, but in failing, we may come closer than ever before. Andrew Whitby, welcome to Sunday Extra.
Great to be with you, Julian.
Now, Andrew, I'm asking this question in the colloquial sense, but also in the qualitative sense. How good is the Australian census?
It is good, isn't it? I'm sorry to be missing it. It's like five birthdays coming all at once when I'm there. In the US, I only get to do it every 10 years. So, disappointed not to be there this year.
Yeah, but, how does the reputation of the Australian census stand internationally? And what's the quality of the procedures that the ABS adopts?
Yeah, objectively, it's a good count, right? The census has many things loaded on, and we'll talk about those, but essentially it has one job, which is to count how many people there are, and the Australian Census does a pretty good job of doing that. So as you were saying, it typically has a high self-response rate, which is the first and easiest and usually highest quality way of getting information from people. And in the kind of eventual outcome populations, it has a pretty low undercount. So there's a number of ways that statisticians can examine how well they did in a census, including running surveys afterwards to see, who was included and who was missed. And by those standards, Australia is definitely up there with the best censuses in the world.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, the ABS saying two-thirds completed a census form. At one level, maybe intuitively, that doesn't seem as high as you'd like to get the stats that you want. But you report in the book about the way the ABS not only conducts the census itself, but also uses post enumeration surveys to check its data. And Australia was pretty early in adopting that method, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. That was definitely an innovation that was adopted in Australia pretty quickly after I think the US pioneered it. And the self-response rate, I mean, that may not sound that high. The reality is the nice thing about a census is there's a huge amount of focus on it. They're usually pretty well resourced as other surveys go. And so, the ABS now has the chance to chase people and get those responses from people who haven't yet responded. So, of course, the total response rate goes up from the initial self-response rate that you get, particularly in those early days.
Mm. Now, you've covered three millennia of censuses, Andrew. So is there a consensus on when the first census was?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great hook for a book, right? But there really isn't a clear consensus. So I speculate that it arose probably when, humans were first forming complex societies where you needed the kind of level of government that would require managing more people than you could kind of readily organize into tribes or that sort of organization. So that's like 5,000 or 6,000 years ago. The first specific examples that I know of kind of come from mythology. They're sort of cultural memory rather than written history. So the first one of those that I talk about is a census of China under the Emperor Yu, and that's about 4,000 years ago. It might have been organized as part of efforts to kind of organize large armies of labor in order to do a kind of flood mitigation exercise. But not long after that, you also have censuses that are described in the Old Testament in the Bible. So the books of Exodus and Numbers, the name of that Numbers gives you a clue that there's some census taking going on in there under Moses. So those are sort of the earliest, ideas where we have this kind of counting people as an institution. But of course, those are very different from the modern census that we have today. The character of the institution has changed dramatically over that time.
And in particular, you note the move away from conducting censuses for the purpose of tax and raising military forces makes a big difference in terms of the history of the event. We've certainly come a long way, Andrew. How much of the world's population today is covered by a census one way or the other?
Yeah, so this was something that interested me a lot when I was writing a chapter about the kind of expansion of census taking, because for a long time, census taking was patchy, right? It came in various different countries through the sort of 18th and 19th century. But over the 19th century, something happened alongside that, which is that statistics, became a kind of recognized academic and professional discipline, and it became internationalized. So this idea came about of trying to essentially count everybody in the world, right, to take a world census of engaging every country in a census count. At least based on the analysis that I did, using some interesting figures recorded by the League of Nations before the Second World War and then later the UN, I would estimate that we peaked at around 90% in the 2010 series of censuses. In fact, it actually probably declined a little in 2020 because that happened right around when COVID was happening. A bunch of countries delayed their censuses. In some places it helped. I think in Australia it actually helped the quality of the census because people, were sort of stationary in place and easier to count. But, just India by itself hasn't yet made up that census from I think 2021. And that's 15% of the global population. So definitely in the 2020 round that we're sort of on the edge of now, we probably didn't count the same 90% that was in 2010. But the general direction is upward of counting more and more people.
You describe the census as an instrument of power that also has the capacity to be a tool of the powerless. Now, you've researched censuses over not just centuries, but as we've heard, millennia. So could you give us some examples of census that stand out to you as demonstrating those two different aspects, the power and the powerless?
Yeah, so I mean, obviously, I'm sympathetic to the census as an institution. This is definitely a celebration, this book, but I didn't want to ignore the negative aspects, right? And so, the census is obviously an instrument of the state. It's officials of the state going around asking you sometimes somewhat personal information about yourself and counting people and labeling people. And so, because of that, it kind of opens up this possibility for abuse. And so even after you get past that early period that we talked about where it was kind of an extractive institution of state, it was used to levy taxes or impose conscription, even after that in the modern period, it's still very easy to see cases where this was really used as a kind of dramatic, arm of the state in trying to do things to people. Some examples of that, you can look at colonial censuses, right? Both in the sort of, early American colonies, there were censuses and they had a really different character from the first kind of census of the independent United States of America in 1790, which was much more a sort of democratic institution. But the darkest period, I think, of kind of power being imposed on people as part of census taking happens in World War II. And there are many stories of Nazi administrators who used existing census data that they were able to capture as part of occupying countries, or running new censuses to collect data, which were then used to directly target Jews and others in Europe, used to identify them and transport them and ultimately, kill those people in camps. And so that's, I think, the darkest chapter of census taking. But even as you study those instances of census taking, you find these moments of kind of light, of levity, of, humans trying to find a voice where they don't have one, right? So one example I give of that is in the 1911 census in the United Kingdom, the suffragettes, the women who were seeking the vote, mounted a boycott of that census. So they said if they didn't count for the vote, they shouldn't count for the census. And they either didn't participate or they kind of wrote things on the census form expressing their opinions, this sort of state of things. And even in World War II, right, even in that darkest period, there's an example of a census that was taken in Luxembourg just after that country's occupation by Germany. And Goebbels, the Nazi propaganda minister, had decided there should be this census, presumably to sort of justify the occupation, right, to try and associate the Luxembourgers as really being German. So it included these three questions to try to elicit that from the population, asking about nationality and asking about mother tongue and ethnicity. And those are, three topics that you might see on a census today, the one the Australians have just done. Similar topics anyway. And so all these Luxembourgers were expected to answer German to those questions. But instead, the resistance took this and they used it to kind of mount this campaign to get people to answer Luxembourgish, right? Three times Luxembourgish was the slogan. And it worked. People didn't respond German to this question. The census was hastily abandoned in the middle of one night, and it was an embarrassment all around for the occupation. So, you find these moments where because the census in general, this traditional census requires cooperation from the population, it allows this avenue for people to kind of protest or express themselves or fight back against the kind of downward imposition of power that the census otherwise can be.
On Sunday Extra, we're speaking with Andrew Whitby, author of The Sum of the People, How the Census Has Shaped Nations from the Ancient World to the Modern Age. And you referred to the biblical account of a census before, Andrew, and I gather that you actually took a trip to the Middle East to retrace the census story recounted in the Bible. Could you tell us about that trip and what you learnt from it?
Yeah, of course. Your listeners are probably generally familiar with the Christmas nativity story, right? So Mary and Joseph travelling from Nazareth to Bethlehem to eventually give birth to Jesus and launch this, you know, global religion. And so we're kind of all familiar with the donkey and the wise men and the nativity scene and all of that kind of stuff. But what people may not remember is that the reason given for this journey, the reason that they had to make this journey to Bethlehem, is that there was to be a Roman census. And apparently this would require Joseph to go to Bethlehem. And so, you know, like a lot of other people, I grew up with this story, and this was obviously a fascinating thread to follow when I became interested in this topic. And it turns out, or at least in more peaceful times, it turned out that you could do walking tours of this route, which takes you through modern-day Israel and the West Bank. It's a doubly interesting place to go for somebody interested in census-taking and demography, because the demographic situation is part of the conflict in that part of the world, right? So there are roughly 50% Jews and Arabs living between Israel and the occupied Palestinian territories. It's about 7 or 8 million each. So, you know, any eventual end to that conflict is going to have to deal with that demographic reality. And the consequence of that is that when Palestinians take censuses these days in those occupied territories, they're more than just a technical exercise, right? And both sides are using it as a kind of political or a propaganda tool. So you have on the Israeli side, you know, various ways in which the census is being impeded, census takers in East Jerusalem being arrested. These stories come up, you know, every 10 years when this happens. On the Palestinian side, it's very clearly being used as a kind of exercise of nation building, of staking their claim as a state. And all of that, obviously, you can see immediately as you read the published census reports, right? But I think going there really mattered as well, right? Because immediately when you enter the landscape, you can see, you know, why it's a difficult thing to take this census, given the kind of political reality of that part of the world. So I think it gave me a real sense of the seriousness, even today, of demography and of how statistics and census taking in particular have consequences in the real world. And in a way, it gives me a real appreciation for the relatively milder conditions under which the Australian census is conducted.
And we've only got about a minute left, Andrew, but you write at the end of your really fascinating book that we live in the world the census has created, but also that the information society may be what ultimately kills the traditional census. Why is that?
Yeah, I mean, the traditional census it's expensive, it's labor intensive, and it was invented for this kind of low information world where people had no idea if the population was increasing or decreasing or 5 million or 10 million. But these days we have a lot more information from other sources, right? So governments have a lot more information from, you know, in some countries, population registers specifically designed to address this, but even outside of that, from things like tax records and Medicare data and school enrollment, Centrelink and all these things. So statistical agencies everywhere are looking at how they can use those things to answer some of the questions that are covered in the census.
Well, it really is a great account of censuses across the ages, and it's been great speaking with you about it on Sunday Extra. Andrew, thanks very much for joining us, and happy Census 2026.
Thank you very much, Julian.
That's Andrew Whitby, a data scientist and economist, Australian born, as you can hear, now resident in the US, and he's the author of the book, The Sum of the People, How the Census Has Shaped Nations from the Ancient World to the Modern Age.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.